White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
White Aryan Resistance calling, White Aryan Resistance calling. This is White Aryan Resistance and Terrible Tommy right here in the bunker in north central Indiana, coming to you on a beautiful sunny day. It's cool, a light breeze, and I planted a whole bunch of flowers and vegetables this morning. Yeah, maybe we'll be able to eat this fall, or at least eat flowers. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. But don't stop there after you've sent your donation for the radio show in. And, of course, you notice we're sending them out 7 days a week now. Saturday and Sunday is archive shows, but there's some really hot archive shows up there, too, you know. And guess what? I've gone back to a landline phone machine message deal here for White Aryan Resistance. The number is going to be 260-625-3027, but don't call today because it's not going to be on until the 8th, and I still have to hook my machine up and so forth. So for all those people out there, you know, that don't have a computer, and there are a lot of people that don't have a computer, give them that number, 260-625-3027, but wait till later in the week or they won't get anything. Well, are you all done crying about the Great One, Cassius Clay? He'll always be Cassius Clay to me. Muhammad Ali. Boy, I'm telling you, this country is, and, well, Europe too, is getting more into negrophilia every day. It's unbelievable. Almost anybody's got any notoriety at all, a black, dies, and they go on and on and on like they were super Hollywood stars. It's unbelievable. Every station, every radio station, every TV station, they're all going on and on, and all these politicians going on. They hated his guts. They hated his guts. And now he's such a wonderful humanitarian Negro and all that. It's enough to gag a maggot. I'll tell you, I told you many times before, the one thing I hate worse is hypocrisy. And this is the goddamnedest hypocritical country and population and white population in the world. I mean, it's only secondary to Europe and the British. Yeah, they got real problems over there, man. And looks like maybe they might skate through and get out of the EU. If they don't get out of the EU, they're screwed. And they're fighting hard on this thing, and the powers that be and the big banks and all them are fighting hard against Britain getting out of the EU. And you got a sizable leftist crowd over there that are unbelievable with all these people coming into Britain and getting all these jobs and pushing people out of housing and everything else, and they're out there rioting against the so-called the anti-invasion crowd. They actually want to fight them to bring more of these people in. They're insane. I mean, these people are truly insane. The right wing may make a lot of mistakes, and I may criticize them, but at least they're right on infiltration and immigration and stuff like that. It's a very complicated situation, but really not. You know, I've got a new idea that, you know, I was badmouth and Breitbart outfit is the right-wing Republican type, conservative type, anti-this and anti-that, and pointing out the bad points. I decided that's the wrong way to go. They, behind it all, there's racism. Whether it's genetic or what it is, everything they're fighting with this immigration thing and invasion is really racial, and whether they realize it or not. And I think what we ought to do is just say, well, that's fine, just read between the lines of what they're saying, where they're swearing there's no racism and we hate racists and all that. But behind the scenes, in reading between the lines, it's a different story. You get what I mean? So I think I'm going to lay off that Breitbart, and if anybody asks me, said, oh, yeah, they're racist as hell, man. They're permeated with racism, but they won't admit it. Yeah, that should work. Well, I see a mulatto negress, Deshauna, has won the, what was it, Miss Universe or some shit like that. And, well, it's going to be that way from here on in, unless there is some kind of wakening up by the white people. I mean, they'll do anything not to be called racist. Oh, no. So they vote every time for a non-white, and so we got this great black babe, Deshauna, now to worship for the next year until they have another contest, and it'll probably be an Asian next time. So white girls, step aside. Your day is over. That is, unless you want to fight, and I mean fight. But don't think you're going to get anywhere by telling the white, beautiful white girls they're being shoved out, because they'll attack you like mad. You're a racist son of a bitch. We hate you, you know. That's the way it is now. They've been so brainwashed for decades now in the schools and the colleges, that you try to talk some sense into some of these people that are losing their careers. I mean, you see it all the time. And if you say something, well, that's horrible. We owe it to the black people. We owes it to the black people, man. Another thing about Cassius Clay, he was used the whole time of his career by the Jews. Boxing has been controlled by the Jews for long, long time, and that other fuzzy-headed nigger, the Jews let him in on Don King. They let him in on a deal. But for the most part, it's Jewish controlled, and they end up taking most of the money these guys made and putting it in their bank accounts. Their accountants are usually crooks too. So Cassius Clay ends up a gibbering idiot, being led around and everybody making money off of him. Now he got nine kids. Jesus. Now, they're going to all be fighting over the money, if there's any money around. I'll bet you the Jews have already cleaned him out a long time ago.
An attack on one of their own is a bias crime. 59-year-old Muhammad Rashid Khan hospitalized after three young men beat him as he left a mosque in Queens. Eyewitness News reporter Stefan Kim live outside that mosque in Queens Village with more for us. Stefan?
Well, Diana, the victim was leaving his mosque a few blocks down that direction when his friend says he watched three young men chase him down this street, then around this corner, then allegedly beat him here, breaking so many bones in his face he can't even recognize his loved ones.
This is Muhammad Rashid Khan, the 59-year-old now fighting for his life after he was allegedly beaten by three young men after leaving his mosque. Broken bones in his face, fractured ribs, and a concussion. He can't speak, he can't eat, he can't even open his eyes. His family says the alleged assailants broke more than his body. They've broken their faith in humanity.
My uncle is an American citizen that did not deserve this. And he is very humble, and he doesn't bother anybody.
It was 10:30 Wednesday night when Khan left the Center for Islamic Studies on Jamaica Avenue in Queens Village. He left with his friend, Zaman Ali. Khan was on his bike when Ali says he saw the three suspects chase after him. He was wearing traditional Islamic attire. The alleged assailants, his friend says, did not steal a thing. They left him with his wallet, his watch, and his bike. But they did steal his sense of security. Ali says they cold-heartedly laughed after they beat him, leaving him there on the street, clinging to life.
I keep telling him to stay with me, stay with me.
The New York chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations is calling on the NYPD to investigate the attack as a possible hate crime and asking police to preserve any surveillance video that may help catch his attackers. Community leaders say the attack is even more disturbing in light of the recent political atmosphere.
Unfortunately, rather than that diversity serving as the strength of our nation, it has been recently under attacks with all the political rhetoric that is occurring, which is really inciting more hatred, more viciousness.
Now, the NYPD, as of right now, is not categorizing this as a hate crime, but the Hate Crimes Task Force is aware. Khan, meanwhile, is scheduled to undergo surgery tomorrow at Jamaica Medical Center. Reporting live in Queens, Stefan Kim, Channel 7, Eyewitness News.
Well, I'm going to tell you what old hard-hearted, terrible Tommy says. You should have stayed in your country. You should have stayed where you belong, because millions of people don't like the fact that you've come here. And there's such a thing as tribalism and a nation state and so forth like that. You're not a part of the nation. So my liberal advice to you would be gather everybody up in your family and go back to your motherland where you should be happy. If we can get the Pentagon to stop bombing your country, you might be encouraged to go back quicker. Now, the fact that the culprits were not identified, even though they were seen, tends to let me think these were Negroes, untouchables, that beat this person. And it's going to get much worse. You haven't even seen the beginning of this stuff yet. Non-whites on non-whites. Tremendous amount of that's going to be going on and is going on right now. So, maybe I can encourage a little interracial diversity gunfights or something. They're going to do it anyhow, so don't worry about it. There's nothing you can do to make it happen any sooner. It's going to happen anyhow. I see the Southern Baptist church leader says Donald Trump is a lost soul who must repent. If I'm not mistaken, the Southern Baptist church used to be the real hangout of the Klan and everybody else down south that wasn't a Catholic, I guess. They were, most of the racist whites in the South were members of the Southern Baptist church. Let's see what he's got to say here.
What would be your prayer for someone like Donald Trump? Because he, if he does indeed become president of the United States, and I know that sounds unthinkable, but we also thought it was unthinkable that he win the Republican nomination.
Right.
What is that prayer for Donald Trump?
Well, my primary prayer for Donald Trump would be that he would, first of all, that he would repent of sin and come to faith in Jesus Christ. That's my prayer for any lost person. And then that he would be somebody who would act in terms of principles of justice, which would mean a change, not only in terms of the way that he's changing the moral character of people, including the people who are supporting him and getting on the bandwagon and having to excuse things that they've never had to excuse before. And then, of course, in terms of being a ruler, in a limited sense within an American constitutional framework, who understands principles of justice. And so that would be a remarkable change. I of course believe people can change, but that would be a remarkable change. And the same thing would be true in terms of Hillary Clinton. This is someone who has a different set of problems and issues. But really, regardless of what happens in November, my primary focus is not November 2016. My primary focus is 2017 and preparing the church to be a church, which is going to have to be a sign of contradiction, regardless of whether Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump is in the White House. And I think there are many evangelicals who aren't accustomed to that, because evangelicals of a certain generation are accustomed to thinking that the White House flips back and forth between the good guys and the bad guys. And when the good guys are in office, we can relax. And then the good guy and the bad guys are in office, and we have to be a prophetic witness. I think those old categories, if they were ever true, are certainly no longer true.
Well, did you get that, boys and girls? He's going to tell them how to do it. Oh, Donald Trump should get down on his knees and pray the Almighty God, Jesus Christ, and all the saints and all that stuff, man. Because we Southern Baptists, we're pure and holy and never done anything racist. In the whole existence of the Southern Baptist Church, there's never been one racist in the church. I must say we've had a lot of pedophiles in the church, though, and I don't know about this guy, but we better check him out, too. Hypocrisy, hypocrisy. It's everywhere. I love it. Can you really say someone that's got several $1 billion in his bank account can be truly lost? I think he could afford a compass, don't you? Well, on Saturday, the Freethinkers gathered on the National Mall for their second Reason rally in fewer numbers than organizers had hoped, but with evidence of growing political acceptance. Wearing T-shirts and carrying signs rejecting religion and supporting science, thousands cheered speeches from politicians, scientists, and secular leaders about the church separation, church-state separation, and freedom from religion. Well, how about that? If it wasn't so far away, I'd have gone there. But there's a hell of a lot of freethinkers that I don't agree with, and they sure don't agree with me. I think a lot of them despise me as much as the Christians do. So anyhow, that's just the way it goes. But it's good. The more we can get people away from Christ's insanity, the better. I mean, save them. I've got to be saved from religion. One thing I forgot to comment on was that Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay, was not, as far as I could figure, a real Muslim. He was a black Muslim. He joined up with Farrakhan and the boys. Which I read many times that the actual Muslims don't accept the black Muslims, but maybe they've changed. I don't know. Well, Germany's refugee crisis is challenging the country's main religious groups as they try to balance a welcoming attitude to the mostly Muslim invaders and concern for the welfare of the minority Christians among them. Increasingly, accounts of Muslim invaders ganging up on Christians and other minorities in refugee shelters have raised concern. Germany is dealing with an influx of about 1 million newcomers from the Middle East, Asia, and Africa. Jeez. Angela Merkel, you're a race criminal, man. You're of the worst kind. Author of the article asks, why was Bob Kennedy or Robert F. Kennedy killed? Well, on his 48th anniversary of his death, let us remember why Senator Robert F. Kennedy died. Bobby Kennedy was the first American victim of modern Arab terrorism. Why was that? Well, Kennedy was assassinated in the kitchen of the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles shortly after midnight on June 5th, 1968, 48 years ago, yesterday. I know, I was watching it on TV, I saw it live. It was a wake of his victory in California presidential primary. Kennedy's assassin was Palestinian resident of Silwan in East Jerusalem, Sirhan Bishara. Sirhan, well, they should have left Sirhan over there in Palestine. What was he doing working in the kitchen at the hotel? Historical note, Silwan was also called the City of David. It is, in fact, one of the oldest areas of Jerusalem. Sirhan chose to kill Kennedy on the exact date because it coincided with the first anniversary of Israel's stunning victory during the Six-Day War, which was totally supported by the United States. That's what happens when you stir the pot, stir the crap. Sirhan hated Kennedy because he had supported Israel. Well, I can understand that. They're killing Palestinians all over the place. In fact, that was exactly what Sirhan said when he testified at his own trial. He remains in prison serving a life sentence for murder. As far as I'm concerned, he should have been let out a long time ago. Why is it important that we remember this barely remembered historical tidbit about the death of Kennedy? Yeah, why? Because one man's hatred of Israel utterly redirected American political life in the story of the presidency. Wow. Kennedy's assassination eliminated one Democrat candidate who arguably could have unified the party. A party that is still or again in desperate need of unification and invigorating it with a new sense of vision. That's bullshit. You're not going to unify the Democrat Party or the Republican Party, any of these parties, because you've got too much diversity now. You want diversity, you got diversity. You're not going to get them unified. It's going to get worse. Kennedy's assassination led to the nomination of Hubert Humphrey. Boy, what a loser he was. And to our lasting chagrin, ultimately to the victory of Richard Milhouse Nixon, who has become a lightning rod for all the criticism. In remembering Bobby Kennedy, let us remember not just what he lived for, but also what he died for. Well, namely, the precious nature of the American-Israeli relationship. Well, what a bunch of bullshit this is. Many Americans sense that Israel's enemies and the enemies of the United States are one and the same. That's why we have to give them $4 or $5 billion every year. And all our latest jets, give them the secrets to the plans of the bombs and the rockets and everything else. That's why we got to keep doing that, because they're such a wonderful friend. The bigger reason is that all the politicians are on the take from the big shot Jews, and they love the money. They loves the money, man. They loves the money. The United States is just a satellite of Israel. The only way we'll ever get out from under that is if Israel collapses and deteriorates, which it gradually will. I think I'd be safe to say that 50 years from now there won't be an Israel. Maybe it'll take 100, I don't know, but it's going to deteriorate, and just like this country's deteriorating. If you want to know how that's going to happen in Israel, let's take a look at the Knesset. If you can get them on TV, watch them going after each other. There's so many totally different sects and everything else in the Knesset. They'll never get along. They'll never get along. Even Netanyahu's packing his bags, getting ready to get out, because he's not going to last much longer. Now we got two wings of the argument fighting each other. Faye Weldon, racism should not trump sexism. She's in England. The fight against sexism should be considered more important than defeating racism, the novelist Faye Weldon has suggested. Well, there you go. Now they're fighting each other. I don't know whether many of you people ever listen to this Joe Scarborough. He's a real first-class son of a bitch on MSNBC, which is the, I don't know what you want to call it, channel. They don't have that many viewers. But anyhow, Joe Scarborough is a first-class asshole, and he went off on Trump. But sitting across the table from him, guess who? Is the Right Reverend Al Sharpton, one of the biggest crooks in the country. Like I said, I sit right next to him on the stage and told him he was a crooked son of a bitch, and he didn't do a thing. Listen to this.
How do you endorse Paul Ryan, a man that supports the banning of 1.4 billion Muslims from ever entering the United States of America? You make him back down, actually. That's what I was hoping, that perhaps we could put pressure on him to back down and change that policy. Instead, Al, he's doubled down, and now it's people that may have, what is it, 1/16th Mexican blood? If you got 1/16th Mexican blood, then maybe you can't be a judge. 1/16th Muslim blood? I mean, this is unbelievable. He is getting worse.
We're getting to the point where you have to ask yourself, who do you hate the worst? You got a million choices of who to hate. Talk about hating. Guys like that Scarborough, you just want to reach through the screen and pull his nose off his face. And there's a whole lot of people in the media that I feel that way about. They are truly, truly scum, scum, scum. Donald Trump couldn't be anywhere near as bad as the media people who always giving him trouble. You remember Dr. Seuss? And Dr. Seuss is like America's favorite crazy uncle. I never really cared for his cartooning, but a lot of the kids did. And as with our actual uncles, we compartmentalized his history of blatant racism. We don't love it, but he wasn't always being racist. So as long as we can talk about something else, it's fine. We can stick to safe topics like whimsical stories of cats and hats, green eggs, ham, and stolen Christmases. No reason to even think about how he was responsible for some reprehensible and wonderful propaganda piece and super racist ads. Let's see here. What did he do? I'm going to send you some of these cartoons of the Germans and the Japanese. Dr. Seuss was a product of his time, plus he eventually changed his tune. You know, a lot of people do that, don't they? He was born in 1904. If you're shocked, a white American turned out racist after being born at a time when people were still accidentally writing the year as 18-something on their checks. Then you must be walking around in a state of perpetual shock. The important thing is that Dr. Seuss realized that racism was bad and became much more enlightened. No, he was making money being a racist, championing progressive causes, and even writing books for kids that not too subtly point out the importance of celebrating differences. No, just another hypocrite. Many consider his classic One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish an example of that message, but it turns out that a lot of the subtext of One Fish says the exact opposite, revealing an underlying racism that the good doctor just couldn't get away from. You might want to light some candles because the shit's about to get pretty dark. Right from the title, we're already all about color differences. Which, fine, if it's a book whose message is differences are good, then we're obviously going to be talking about what makes the characters different. But the story parades before us a variety of animal-shaped beings who all seem to have a disturbingly servile purpose. And they're not animals in the sense that we know animals. They're intelligent and self-aware, and they can speak. Drive cars, among other things. The inquisitive white children call them funny things and seem to literally own them, referring to them as theirs, as if they're possessions. They also often are branded with their own names. The institutional inequity is readily apparent, if you know what I mean. I'm saying these funny things are a subjugated group in this world. They're oppressed. Get it? Look, they represent black people. Wow. Written in 1960, the book emerges in the middle of the Civil Rights Movement. Coincidence? Not freaking likely. given Dr. Seuss's less than savory artistic history, even as he outwardly attempted to stress tolerance and acceptance, in his subconscious he was still the guy who had no qualms drawing those racist cartoons earlier in his life. He was also surrounded his whole life by ambiguous, damaging characters that must have crept into his brain. As a result, everyone's favorite nonsense book of childhood memory is actually filled with racist stereotypes. The funny stresses that funny things are everywhere. An ominous warning about equality. The funny things live alongside the children of the book and do everything that a person can. They push strollers with babies, drive cars, talk on the phone, and own homes. Why aren't they considered equals? A few specific examples. We like our bike. It's built for three. Our mic sits up back, you see. So the lily-white kids own a dude called Mike who always rides on the back of the bike. This isn't even one of those moments where we can say, so far, so good. This section of the book has only four sentences in it. And within these four sentences, we find out that the children own a guy, force him to sit on the back and keep him around only so he can perform forced labor. Not cool, guys. I think it's damn cool. Dr. Seuss, I never liked you before. I never got the message. You're familiar with the back-of-the-bus era of history, I'm sure. Well, if I'd have been running the bus company, they wouldn't even have been on the bus. They're lucky they were in the back of the bus. They'd have to get their own bus. I'm sure, but just in case, before the civil rights, so-called civil wrongs movement, there were segregation laws that required Negroes to always sit in the back if they were riding the bus. Well, if they didn't like that, they should have bought their own buses. They weren't quite as happy about it as Mike seems to be. From December 55 to December 56, the Montgomery bus boycott challenged those laws. And when those buses got attacked by the Klan or Klan-like people down there, guess who was their attorney? Morris Dees. That's how he made his first money defending the Klan. Maybe Mike should sit wherever he damn well pleases or stage his own boycott. Well, he's probably too stupid to drive the bicycle. Except he's not even that far along. First, he needs to be freed from slavery. Actually, it's a monkey they show on the back of the bike. It's not a man. We like our bike. It's made for three. Our mic sits in back, you see. We like our mic, and this is why Mike does all the work when the hills get high. The actual reason children like Mike, they say, is that he's essentially their beast of burden when they don't feel like pedaling up steep hills. Well, that makes sense. Get yourself untouchable to push you. This is a common theme of Dr. Seuss's funny things throughout his book. The highlighted differences are often things that are imposed on these guys. Not a celebration or something that makes them unique, and being a hill slave isn't the only imposition that calls to mind the ugly racial tensions. My. They wait till after the guy's dead and then they dogpile him. They do that to a lot of people. Yeah. I'll see if I can lift some of these cartoons off and send them to you. Well, evidently, Dr. Seuss was a Nazi, a dirty neo-Nazi. I don't know. He might have been a Jew. I don't know. You never know about these things. Well, let's see what these experts got to say about racism. I love it. These eggheads, you know, it's safe. Anybody who attacks racism, it's safe. You're a wonderful person today. You know, 50 years ago, it'd be a different story. Oh, they still did it, but not near as much. Now, anybody who could come up with some kind of an article attacking racism. They're heroes. They're wonderful people. They're godlike. Outright racism is awakening like Godzilla rising from the sea. Ah, sounds good to me. While institutional and individual racism in America is largely a thing of the past, boy, are you screwed up. The ugly monster still has its feet firmly planted in American soil. I was raised in the North, born at the tail end of the baby boom. It was not uncommon to hear racial slurs spoken in those days. Even casually, the nigger word was not unspeakable then. Many people who raised kids in those days are still alive, like the Israelites in the Sinai. They haven't all died off, so the generation who lived with casual racism still lives. They refuse to die. Some remember a day before the 1948 Democrat National Convention, when Harry Solomon Truman was given the green light to issue Executive Order number 9981, given the green light by the Jews, I guess, which read, "It is hereby declared that to be the policy of the President that there shall be equality of treatment and opportunity for all persons in the Armed Services Social Company without regard to race, color, religion, or national origin." Yeah. Boy, there went. That was really a day. Harry was something else. He drops the atomic bombs on the poor Japanese and he drops the race bomb on us. The policy of racial segregation in our military was formalized by the first progressive president of the United States, Democrat Woodrow Wilson. He's going to keep us out of war. And he got us killed like mad over in Europe. He was a tried and true racist. Well, I do know that. Whose writings were cited in the KKK-promoted film Birth of a Nation. After that movie premiered in Atlanta, a group of Klansmen held a fiery cross ceremony on the summit of Stone Mountain, which was then privately owned, but now a statue is a Confederate memorial and public recreational area owned by the state of Georgia. I think that was, I'm trying to remember his name that ran the Klan, James Venable. Yeah, James Venable's family owned that Stone Mountain deal up there. And I think probably the family after James Venable, who was the head of the National Knights, after he died, I think the family gave it to the state. But still, that's pretty good. They've got a recreational area there and a statue and a Confederate memorial. So anyhow, at least did some good there. The post-Reconstructionist racism of the 1910s is making a comeback in the 2010s. Wow. President Obama is a staunch believer in reparations, that white Americans owe blacks something for the past 400 years of slavery and Jim Crow. Well, yes, they do, and they should take it from the people who got it. The people who inherited all that money from the cotton plantations, and they invested it in northern insurance companies. Of course, much of the profits of the South was invested in the northern corporations even before the Civil War. Yeah, they did, yeah. But I think they should take it from the rich and give it to the working class people. Yeah. And give them 40 acres and a mule, too, on the other side of town. At every opportunity, he frames each situation through the lenses of white guilt and black liberation. With such race awareness, old dormant feelings rise back up. They sure do. Old feelings that extend to who fought in the Civil War and on what side flare into active consciousness. I grew up in the North where the form of racism practice was high but not close, and moved to the South where racism was close but not high. That means Northern blacks were elevated to high positions as long as they didn't live on white streets. Yeah. That's an interesting part of segregation. Make money off of them in the daytime, but don't want to socialize with them at night. Yeah. White flight from the entire neighborhoods in Metro Boston and North Shore were common things. The landlords refused to rent to blacks was normal. Yeah. It should have stayed normal. In the South, blacks and whites lived literally across the tracks from each other. Certainly there was an economic disparity, but the black sharecroppers and white dirt farmers frequently shared their poverty and sometimes their field. But the blacks were not allowed to serve in any capacity where they had power. Yeah. Reconstruction through the civil rights movement in 1960s did much to end the South's institutional racism, but nothing to stop the Northern segregation until the busing of the 1970s. Up until then, the North liked to criticize the South all the time. They still do. There's still a lot of buried tension and even hatred today. Well, you better believe it. It's growing, too. I personally was not taught racism. I grew up with a group of friends that included literally every black person in my high school, and there were three, a couple of Chinese kids, the only Jewish kids in the school, and a half Lebanese. Well, let me tell you, in my high school, we had one black guy, two grades ahead of me, and he was the class president. Russell Sainsbury was his name. I think he became a doctor, so I think they did pretty well in my school. Nobody in my family said anything to me, but in private moments, those casually spoken slurs would come out of my parents about, look at those niggers over there, who they thought they are. That's how it was in the North. I can imagine my wife, who is Southern, that's how it was in the South. With 8 years of Obama's race baiting and left's digging for racism until they actually find it. Now they've found it. They've dug deep enough to root out the monster and all his ugly glory. Donald Trump has risen from the radioactive muck of pre-civil wrongs America. This is a funny article. This is a man who casually throws around terms like, blacks love me. Well, the plantation owners did the same thing. My blacks loves me. And they maybe they did, you know, if he treated them well. Then accused the only black GOP candidate of being pathological. He speaks casually of Mexican mestizo rapists and murderers, which there are thousands and thousands of them. The prisons are full of them. Then has a taco bowl at his Manhattan Tower to celebrate Cinco de Mayo. Well, they should be impressed. What can you do to make those people happy? I guess he should have ate sauerkraut and pretended he was a German or something. But then they'd have bitched because he didn't eat anything Mexican. You can't win with these people. He accuses an Indiana-born federal judge who prosecuted Mexican drug cartels of bias, because the man has a mestizo heritage. Well, he just don't like that mestizo son of a gun. I didn't even know he was here in Indiana. I've been here 11 years? This is casual racism I heard growing up. This is the monster we thought was dormant and simply waiting for a generation to die. We thought that the Dylann Roofs of the world were aberrations. No, I guarantee you they're not. But instead of pursuing healing, which Governor Nikki Haley and Charleston residents divinely did, Nikki Haley is, what is she, some kind of a Indian or something? Like that Jimmy Swindle down there in Louisiana, I guess. I wrote about it with tears streaming from my eyes. You hypocrite. The race baiters dug until they found the monster. They went after the symbols of the Confederacy, Confederate flag, cultural icons, which are tied to the casual racism, which was waiting to die. Whoa. And they stirred it back up and gave it new life. Let's hear a yay. Let's hear a yay. Now we have a candidate in the Republican Party whose policies in many ways mirror Woodrow Wilson. He would create a fortress America. I'm getting sexually aroused, cold and imperious, while giving space to the monster and watching it grow. The thousands of racists on Twitter are only a shadow of the monster that lay dormant, and the casual racism that had become politically incorrect to even think. Now politically correctness is out with Trump, the Trump crowd, so much so that things are actually evil and should be banned or bandied about with no thought of consequence. We've got to get rid of that free speech shit. They're saying bad things about black people. Our nation is badly in need of racial healing. In other words, race mixing. We're badly in need of political leaders who can be a spiritual shoulder. No, I'm not in favor of self-important poopas like John Kasich, the Prince of Light and Hope. I'm in favor of someone who regards casual racism as racism, who regards casual anti-Semitism as Jew hatred, who regards people who say and practice such things as saying and practicing evil. Wow. Donald Trump is none of these. Hillary Clinton is none of these. She and Bernie Sanders are do-gooders who would tolerate any amount of minority race baiting and digging until another monster emerged. Is that what guilt-ridden liberal old white people do? Probably. America was nearly race blind for a time, maybe in your neighborhood. It seemed there was nothing but hope, nothing but waiting for the generation who practiced casual racism to die out, for inequalities in crime, unemployment, and education to be addressed in a meaningful way. But the race baiter in the White House dug with all his might, and out climbed Godzilla. When the monster emerged, the Republican Party just stood by and watched it in awe and spectacle. They did nothing to stop it. As Eric wrote, damn them. The Democrats awakened the racist monster, and the GOP fed it. Now America may have a battle to battle it for another 100 years. God, I'm so excited. This is the most exciting thing I've read in a long time. Since Birth of a Nation, I think. Just remember, boys and girls, feed the monster. Feed the monster. Oh, yeah, the black bimbo that won the she's the new Miss America. Miss America, there you got. You got every young girl in the country looking up to Deshawna Barber, a successful mulatto. Never dared to put up Mrs. Obama. She's dry. Blacks are just as hypocritical as the whites because they're... Muhammad Ali, he might have left us, but his legacy will always be here with us. His life and his victories give us strength. 90% of the black race could give shit less about Cassius Clay. Once he quit fighting, he was a nobody. I mean, except in a small group, small circle. And so all these, they're going to be crying and gnashing of teeth over Muhammad Ali for a week and then back in the closet with his memories. Well, Christine McMullen Lindgren worked for the Bank of America Let's see, where did she work at? Bank of America employee loses her jobs after a statement on Facebook, you know. So she said, "I hate Facebook for this reason. You fucking niggers, and yes, you can call each other that. Well, I can too, fucking nigger. Go back to Africa. Get over your pity party. You created this hatred and of your own kind and brought your great-great parents, grandparents over here and sold them to do something with your lives and your children's lives. I'm sure you don't work collective welfare and teach hatred your poor children at five or them can't afford because I pay for them." Well, that's what she said. That's all I can see here. Yeah, so anyhow, she got fired because Facebook now is not safe for white people. All I ever used Facebook for was to answer articles with the comments. I didn't use Facebook for anything else, so they eliminated my membership simply because I was commenting on political and sometimes racial stories that were in the news, but the only way you could get to answer them was to go through Facebook. You couldn't get to them any other way. So anyhow, that's the way that goes. So anybody that wants to say anything unkindly about the darker race on Facebook, they're going to bump you, but you should get off Facebook anyhow. There's another place where you can go, and I heard it on the radio this morning on Breitbart. I didn't write it down, but if I hear of it again, I'll tell you about it. It's similar to Facebook. After she says that, it stays unclear what caused this demonstration of rage, but Post immediately faced criticism from internet users. A lot of people demanded McMullen Lindgren be fired from her position. Some of the bank clients even considered closing their accounts. Oh, shit. On June 2nd, Bank of America posted a response on Twitter claiming, "We are aware of an unacceptable post on Facebook. The comments are reprehensible. We have terminated the employment of the individual," unquote. That's typical of Bank of America. I can tell you stories about Bank of America. They furnished up all the information I had, my history, my banking, in the Portland trial. They didn't fight them at all. They just turned it all over to D's. "In case we want to appreciate people who didn't stay indifferent and demanded for justice to be restored, hatred could only be overcome when white people understand that they are not untouchable and we can get them no matter where they're at, and that they have to face punishment for every offense in word and action. And so will you as time goes by. It's not over, boys and girls, until it's over." I see an article in here about how Americans forget the black heroes of D-Day. The forces weren't integrated until 48, so that would have had to have been a black unit. And I've never heard much about the heroism of a black unit at D-Day anymore. I'll tell you, they had those blacks that flew those airplanes over the Mediterranean. They made a movie out of them, how wonderful, how great a heroes. Well, that didn't happen that way at all. There's plenty of military history to show that the Germans were thrilled when they sent up black pilots over the Mediterranean because they shot the shit out of them. And the reason they got put into frontline flying over the Mediterranean was that bitch Eleanor Roosevelt, who loved blacks. She even had a black boyfriend while her husband was in the White House. So she insisted they put blacks up there to prove their worth. And they didn't prove to be worth much. But they twist history around so badly. I mean, there's nothing sacred anymore as far as history. Here's a funny one. Fox News panel host Megyn Kelly, Donald's friend, asked a former Los Angeles police officer, Mark Furman, remember him from the OJ trial, and their usual contributor, Sheriff David Clark, to explain the reasons behind the steep rise in police violence in Chicago, a city where there were more than 400 shootings just last month in the ghetto. Furman, when asked whether the massive shootings are part of the viral video effects, the police director suggested, responding that one of the reasons is, quote, because of the technologies people have in the street, unquote. He said the problem was also caused by the refusal of officials to supply police officers with military-grade materials to attack gang members, showing his strong support to the controversial concept of police militarization. Well, yeah, you got to give them all kinds of machine guns. They can take care of those niggers down there, okay? Milwaukee Sheriff David Clark contributed by saying, quote, I also think that it's a cultural dysfunctional black underclass in the city of Chicago that's causing the violence. No shit. Guy told the truth for a change. I wonder if he's black, Sheriff David Clark. Sheriff Clark said the cops were scared of the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. Well, of course they are. Instead of having lawyers from the Civil Rights Division down there combing through things, looking to snag some poor Chicago police officer for some transgression. Yeah. Chicago black communities, would you call them communities? I would not call them communities by any white standard, are facing real problems all because the city mayor, Rahm Emanuel's poor leadership. Well, he can't help it. It's his genes. And he's also corrupt and a jerk and a buddy of Obama. The level of poverty in the city is close to shocking. The living conditions are no better. And nobody really bothers to serve and protect there. Well, if you gave them all the white houses, then they'd be okay, right? No, they would turn those houses upside down in less than a month. People continue to die from police brutality. And police officials dare to blame those poor blacks for their death. When at last, when they manage to attract attention to their problems through protests, police say that they're still not going to work as they work the wrong way and they do not want to be punished. Doesn't that sound childish and ridiculous to you? Well, I don't know. The cops screw up and Negroes naturally screw up. So what are you going to do? Well, boys and girls, here's another day and another show. We got into the stuff today, didn't we? Yeah. Hypocrisy, wonderful racism, the monster, Godzilla is rising again. Oh, things are looking up. Things are looking up. See you tomorrow. Tears Day.
Thank you.
Rest in pieces, Cassius Clay.